Industrial policy, who governs? Dr. Virek Prum. Last year in March, the government adopted a major policy called the Industrial Development Policy, which laid down a 10-year economic strategy. If all goes well, the policy posits that Cambodia would enjoy good economic growth with greater competitiveness, higher productivity, and so on. The very existence of such an industrial policy shows that the government takes a goal-oriented approach to the economy. This seems like a commendable act, indeed. Mindful of the need for an effective coordination mechanism among various stakeholders, the policy has made the Council for the Development of Cambodia the coordinator for this 2015-2025 project, tasked with preparing progress reports every 3 months. We have yet to see the first of these reports, but in the meantime I want to take a step back to think more institutionally. It's important to note that this policy did not just fall from the sky. In fact, historically speaking, we know that industrialization, as an economic phenomenon, took place hundreds of years ago in the period between the 18th and 19th centuries when agrarian and rural societies in Europe and America were transforming themselves into industrial and urban towns. More importantly, we should remember that states that were the first to industrialize took on the role as the regulator, regulatory state, whereas those that were late to industrialize usually played the role as the developer, developmental state. These different roles responded to the stubborn reality that at the beginning of the industrialization era, the state needed not worry much about the types of economic activities that would emerge. It was instead focused on the necessity to make regulations that would ensure fair competition and protect consumers. With the adoption of the Industrial Development Policy last year, Cambodia has officially begun to industrialize, following the post-war period. If so, it is crucial that the Cambodian state assume its most appropriate role, that is, whether it should primarily focus on the regulatory functions or more on the developmental functions. Any attempt to answer a question of this magnitude could defeat the allowable length of this article. But from an institutional viewpoint at least, I could go back to where the term industrial policy had attracted so much attention, Japan. In essence, the Japanese Sanyu Saisaku, industrial policy, incorporated two waves of tasks. The first wave required, among other measures, adoption of new production techniques, perfection of managerial control, fair competition to facilitate mutual assistance locally and suitable industrial structuring to enable and enhance Japan's international competitiveness. The industrial structure later became a standalone second wave of tasks through which the state imposed clear proportions assigned to sectorial industries such that the Japanese would know how much to produce from agriculture, manufacturing, services, etc. In other words, the first wave of policies made it possible for the state to get information from companies that performed well and then made that useful information available to the rest, whereas the assigned industrial proportions, controversial though they sounded, effectively allowed the state to decide which particular sectors should be encouraged, assisted, and adjusted. Although the Japanese often attributed their economic success in part to their three distinctive characteristics, lifetime employment, seniority-based pay and unionism, there is no doubt that the industrial policy was what turned Japan into an economic miracle. Cambodians need not take the Japanese lesson literally, but a quick comparison could yield some beneficial insights. How much does the Cambodian version of industrial policy resemble the Japanese one? At the strategic level, the Cambodian policy depends on four pillars: attract more investments, support small and medium enterprises, build a suitable regulatory framework and improve infrastructure/human resources. The policy has also assigned sectorial proportions. For instance, agriculture would need to go down from 29% in 2015 to only 23% in 2025, whereas, by contrast, the industry would need to go up from 26.2% in 2015 to 30% in 2025 on the distribution of GDP. Analysts may, of course, question whether the Cambodian industrial policy could lead to the adoption of the best industrial techniques and the facilitation of local mutual assistance as exemplified in the Japanese first wave, but it is crystal clear that Cambodian policymakers have assigned sectorial proportions to be implemented from now until 2025. Thus, on its surface, Cambodian industrial policy partially resembles the Japanese one, except that they differ very much institutionally. It has been universally acknowledged that the Japanese economic miracle heavily depended on a very powerful institution called MITI, the Ministry of International Trade and Industry, which was in the driver's seat. Midi had full control over the fate of Sangyu Saisaku with no worrisome interferences from other ministries. This was quite understandable because, for one thing, Midi was attracting the best graduates Japan could produce. Arguably, the Council for the Development of Cambodia, CDC, is apparently tasked with what the mega-powerful Midi was doing in Japan. In spite of a similar mandate, the chief differences between the CDC and Midi lie in their respective strengths and structures. Midi was a strongly centralized ministry which held ultimate authority, controlled every piece of industrial information, commanded respect and inspired awe. It was also able to easily coordinate among relevant departments of power, commerce, trade, industry, as these were within one single ministry. Midi held the authority to approve industrial licenses, strictly scrutinized joint ventures, decided which technology was to be imported and had a lot of say in bringing patent rights from abroad with terms most advantageous to Japan. In short, Midi was the sort of ministry any plan rational economy would especially want. With interministerial coordination in Cambodia known to be what it is, if Cambodia was to succeed with this industrial policy, we must take a step back and inquire whether a day-to-day Midi-like institution should exist in Cambodia to govern this policy. I suspect that this inquiry might ultimately answer the question about which role, regulatory or developmental, the state ought to play more of at this stage.